I'm telling you right now, Walter, the only place to watch the game tomorrow night is MLB Network. Do you have it?
I don't know. I'll check when I get home, but I doubt it.
It's a different day. It's a different day. They're not showing the game on Fox. They're showing it on an MLB Network. And it's something that we've been talking about. We've been annoyed, which is actually a great transition here on 720 WGN Chicago to introduce my guest tonight for the week that was. We're reloading this week's news with two familiar voices and familiar faces here to Chicago. Reunited. It's got to feel good. Walter Jacobson.
Feels great.
And Robin Robinson. Great to see you guys. Thanks for being here.
Here we are, the dynamic duo, right?
Yeah, we haven't had a hello, not to mention a kiss and a hug, and God knows how long. I miss you so much. It is so good to be sitting next to you again, even though you now are a public official, and it's my responsibility to dig at you.
I am not a public official as an appointed or elected. I am simply a civil servant, and I work for you, Walter.
That's
She's good.
How about
well,
that?
Then tell me, what do you think?
Oh, here we go. Wait, I'm sorry. This is Justin's show.
You know, I will gladly defer to Walter Jacobson.
First question he asked me 30 years ago, how old are you? And I thought, you know, I'm sure there's a law against you asking me that, of course, because I was trying to pretend to be older than I was.
So how old are you by now?
Old. I'm old. Okay, I got my AARP card. I asked for my discounts.
But don't forget, you're a lot younger than me. And if I'm not afraid to tell my age, you shouldn't be afraid to tell
I didn't say anything about fear. I just don't want the younger people to feel bad.
Oh, well, that's good.
How about that? Well, I don't want to suffer from adultism.
You both are ageless and timeless in our minds here in Chicago. You have obviously longtime anchors at Fox News here in Chicago. I mean, how long
Fox
were you guys?
Chicago.
Fox Chicago. How long were you guys together on the desk?
Oh,
do you remember that?
You start counting things?
Maybe 5 years?
Oh, no. It was longer than that, Walter. I know time flies when you're having phone. It seems like eight years
my
or something.
My memory
like
is not
that.
Too good.
I was there for a while. And
I know I got there in 1993.
And I got there in 1986 and left in 2014.
You know, but we were also on the news together at CBS.
We were.
For a while.
Well, we were not exactly together. I was the consumer reporter, and he was the big anchor man.
No, we were a really pretty good team because Robin is so quick and so smart.
And he's so curious and will ask you anything.
Yeah.
Because he really wants to know.
Well, good. I think you guys are a perfect pair for us to reload this week's news. We do this every Friday on the download here on 720 WGN. So it's an honor and a privilege to have both of you in studio to talk about a huge week when it comes to news. Obviously, we're going to talk tonight about the biggest story, the winners, the losers, the overreported and underreported stories, what story took you down the rabbit hole, and also which story will be remembered in 55 years, 10 years, 50 years, 500 years from now. We'll get to all those topics. Let's start with the biggest story of the week. What do you got for biggest story of the week, Walter?
I don't think there can possibly be a story bigger or as big as the Cubs. I mean, there's no story that even comes close to that size. Even what Donald Trump got hit for this afternoon, which was really big. In fact, I was thinking Cubs when I knew we were going to talk about this all day today and a little bit yesterday, and I was all set to come in here and talk only about the Cubs. But what happened to Trump this afternoon is just mind-blowing. I think that man may be out of it, really gone.
Obviously, you know, having a piece of audio come out that is damaging, sort of what has he described to be locker room talk, where he just really disparaged and degraded women on tape. I mean, he's already put out a public apology, which is crazy because that's something he doesn't do.
But did he do it very well? He probably doesn't have much practice, so I'm just wondering
exactly.
If it came out well.
I think he did a good job of bringing up Bill Clinton in it. So he just quickly went to a different place. But even since this came out in the afternoon, it is built and it continues to build.
Oh.
You may be right. This may be, at the end of the day, a bigger story than the Cubs if it
and
continues.
And a bigger story than the hurricane, too. I was watching it just before I came here, and I have to disagree with you, Justin, because I don't think that apology, do you? He said simply, if I offended anyone, I'm sorry.
Right.
How could he not have offended anyone?
Right. But the thing is, if we talk about big stories, I guess it depends on how you define that. Because in the scheme of things, you know, who we elect to be the commander-in-chief of, you know, I guess we can't call ourselves always the leader of the free world any longer, but certainly still one of the heavy hitters, you know, one of the most influential. It's our country, whatever the standing is in the world, versus, yes, I know, former bat boy for the Cubs, that the Cubs is a big story and all these Cubs fans, and it's great as a feel-good moment. I mean, if they make it no further than the next three games, right? It's a great, you know, I mean, the city loves that. Chicago rallies around, but in terms of, you know, impact on your life.
You're talking about important, impactful stories. I'm talking about the biggest. You open any one of the newspapers today, turn on any television station here and actually anywhere in the country.
We just did an hour on it. Yeah.
The Sun-Times today had 8 pages before it got to any news other than the Cubs.
I just don't define big by what's on the front page because they miss a lot of things. They have historically forever.
I'm with you, Robin.
I sound like a former smoker that's really bad, because I'm not a former member of the media. I still consider myself to be, a person who reports. Mm-hmm. But I do know that, sometimes it's been argued that some of these big stories are really a distraction from the important stories that will, come.
Well, obviously, if it would be, up to this afternoon, if it wasn't going to be Trump and this hidden audio with Billy Bush, the Hurricane Matthew hitting the Florida coast is one that I would say for biggest story, just for the fact that the rhetoric that was involved in it went so far to say this is not a normal hurricane. This is something we've never seen before. It will kill you.
Well, it killed 800 some people in Haiti, which has become kind of a postscript to the story almost. But that's right. Huge, human tragedy. And the fact that it looped around, it's a hurricane that just keeps giving.
Yep.
It's a big story, and people saying we're not leaving because we think we'll be okay, and just kind of taking that risk, and that being seen as some sort of like the people that do the extreme sports or something.
Yeah.
We're
going to see a lot of images and a lot of stories that come out after the storm passes through. Right now, it's in Georgia, South Carolina, that area. I mean, this is going to be something that when the storm actually, and there's talk about it actually coming back as a tropical storm, but when it goes out to sea, when it dies out, there's going to be so much more about flooding, about misery, about the things that it left behind. As well. So I say those are probably the top three stories. We've got Trump, Cubs, and the hurricane.
One aspect of the hurricane story that interests me is how I think, in a way, it demeans the quality of news, because all the television stations did was send every single big name on television down to Florida to talk, and they were saying for 3 hours that this is murder, and the politicians were using that time. The Governor Scott of Florida saying this is going to be a killer, killer, killer storm.
Right.
And then, after about 5 hours, no doubt it was strong, but it wasn't what they said it was. And by tomorrow, we're going to find, we're going to find that it wasn't as big as they're saying that it is right now. It's kind of the Dan Rather model of covering storms. Dan Rather was in Texas when he was a young reporter, and he stood in front of the cameras and let the wind blow him halfway off his feet. Look where he wound up. That's what all these reporters are striving for. They stand in the middle of the storm and they hold
and they say,
heads.
Don't come out here.
Yeah, right,
where
right.
I am. Well, Walter, this should be put into context that Walter has never been a fan of leading with weather. Like, it better be really doing something, because it does kind of pander to the, if we scare them enough, they will be glued to their television sets. When anything really bad happens, hut levels, households using TVs, goes up.
Great clip of Shepard Smith. Is that the right name?
That's
Fox,
a person. That's
who actually said, he was showing the map and he said, this, you have to leave. This will kill you. It will kill your children.
Oh, yeah.
That's
are you scared? Are you scared
yeah,
now?
Yeah, right. Robin Robinson, Walter Jacobson in studio. We're reloading this week's news. Let's take a quick break. We'll come back and we'll get to the winners and losers and the overreported and underreported stories of the week. Stay with us. Welcome back to Download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. The week that was, we're reloading the week with Walter Jacobson and Robin Robinson in studio. Gosh, so great. Any Chicagoan right now, come on. This is the greatest thing ever.
Well, of a certain age.
No, of all ages. The 10-year-old's got to figure it out at some point, right? All right, so let's talk. We did the biggest story. Let's go to winners and losers. Walter, who you got for a winner? Who's a winner this week?
Well, I'm hoping it's going to be Joe Madden, but I think it's Hillary Clinton. She's going to be in a terrific position on Sunday to win that debate and then just take off. And the Republican Party is stunned by this. If you haven't been watching it all afternoon, you really miss some great drama on television. I mean, all of the Republican leaders, from Ryan to who else?
Mitch McConnell to all the
leaders.
Well, they weren't big fans to begin with.
Right. And they don't know where to go here. I mean, they obviously are going to condone it. They're going to say, you know, or not condone it.
They're not going to condone it.
They're going to say no, that this is outrageous. But at the same time, and we've already seen surrogates come out, Trump surrogates saying, you know, they're going to bring out their talking points, almost like break glass, and it's about Clinton's, and it's about adultery, and it's about Clinton's alleged rapes. That's already come out tonight. Like, they are going to do everything they possibly can to make this a dual story.
It is low down. These people got to look up see down. It's
will be as low as it can get. Let me tell you, if in case you missed it, some of the quotes off that tape that was made on a bus on Access Hollywood when he was on a bus with a bunch of guys.
2005.
Have these tapes been? I have to wonder.
Yeah, waiting.
Yeah,
waiting
where have
in
these
the wings.
Tapes been?
Yeah.
Well, that's a good question. Somebody at NBC leaked the tapes to the Washington Post, and somebody there then made them available to the media. But some of the things he said,
right?
when you were a star, I mean, you could hear it in his voice. When you are a star, you can do anything. I just start kissing him, and then I can do whatever I want to do with him after I start kissing him. He said, Clinton has said far worse things to me on the golf course.
That's what he said in response. That's what he said today. As he was
asked
about
it. But does he have a tape?
He doesn't have that tape. Yeah, but, I mean, there is something to be said about, I mean, hearing him talk about it, you're right. It's very braggadocious, I guess. It's like
He used that word during the debate.
It's very like I've got my chest out and I'm just like, yay, I'm with the guys.
And maybe this is how guys talk when they're together.
Yeah,
I really would like to think not.
It's not. but I mean, I think that, you know, and Walter stayed away from the more vulgar stuff that was said that had to be beeped out and the stuff that I think everybody in this
country
is
saying. But what do you think about the fact that he has said himself, I could shoot someone in broad daylight in the middle of the street and my supporters are still going to be with
me.
That's
right.
I mean, I don't know that there is anything. It's not like it's all.
But that was stating a political reality. That's different from his attitude about women and what men and women can and cannot do to one another. And people, his surrogates, Lewandowski, for example, Corey Lewandowski has been saying all afternoon that this just speaks to he speaks his heart. And
right.
then, of course, if
and
that's
this is just
his
this
heart
is what
speaking,
America says at their dinner table. He's
right.
just following.
If he says I shoot somebody on Fifth Avenue and it won't hurt me at all in the polls in this campaign, he's stating reality. It probably won't.
Well, then why is this?
It's okay for me to grope because I'm.
But
a star.
Robin's right. How is this going to be any different in a political reality? Are we going to see his polls drop? Are people going to not vote for Donald Trump for what he said in 2005? Probably not.
Well, the political ground game is much different now, too. I mean, it's not – he isn't winning votes that he needs to win. He is winning support of the people he needs to support him if he's going to win the states that are up for grabs.
I will say this. I had this down as also one of my rabbit hole stories because I kind of went in on some of the stories that were about how these campaigns are being run. Donald Trump wants to run on a media platform. He didn't put a lot of money into ads. He hasn't done a ground game at all. It's very different. He's not doing the way the standard.
Because everything he does, we follow and cover incessantly.
Exactly.
And so why should he buy an ad? He's entertainment.
This story was about how this is not good, not unlike what it was for Mitt Romney when Hurricane Sandy came through, but when the Hurricane Matthew pushes Trump to the second story, this is not good because this essentially freezes the campaign at the worst possible time. He's not in the news. But then again, here it comes. I mean, even if it's a negative story, this story actually outdoes the hurricane coverage.
His strategists say, they all seem to agree, and as do the experts, with a set of figures that show that Donald Trump must get beyond his base. He must attract women, Republican women who are more moderate, from the suburbs, who are more toward Clinton because they don't like Trump. How can that possibly? Can you imagine any woman who heard him on that tape think about voting for the man? If he doesn't get those votes, he's had it.
Well, they definitely don't want to date him, whether they want to vote him or not.
That's a good point.
Yeah. Robin Robinson, Walter Jacobson in studio tonight. All right, let's take a quick break. We got an update on Rob Martyr's news, get an update on the Cubs game, everything in between. And then we'll come back. We'll continue winners and losers, and we'll also do to overreported, underreported, and continue here reloading this week's news. Stay with us. Welcome back to The Download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Coffin. Robin Robinson, Walter Jacobson in studio, the longtime anchors at Fox Chicago, reunited here to play Week in Review this week. So great to have you guys both. Robin, you've got a new job. You're a director of
community affairs. Titles always elude
me. Chicago Police Department.
Yeah, you have to have a title if you work for the city. So
that's for the budget, right?
They have to put something in there. They kept saying, "Well, what's your title?" I said, "I don't know. Just call me Robin." But I am the director.
Are you enjoying it?
I am enjoying it. It's like all the things that I used to do in my spare time, to try to. Try to help connect people in the community with resources, with each other, with things that can improve in the communities that are suffering, some of the worst violence and that's just the end symptom of all the things that happened before that. You've got the worst education, you've got the worst employment situation, you've got no business district, you've got no opportunity, no hope, no mobility. And at the end of it, when all that happens, then you have violence.
You could tell me no comment. You could tell me to
go away.
But
he's
I have a question I think you'll be happy to answer.
Okay.
Question you'll be happy to answer.
Okay.
Give me an example of what you do or what you have done that will make us all feel better about what you're doing with Eddie Johnson.
I am humanizing police officers and people in the community who have both been victims of terrible stereotyping. There are young children in African American communities that see a person in a police uniform and if you're 3 years old, burst out in tears or run and hide. They are afraid. There are people who see a young black man with his pants sagging and tattoos and dreadlocks and cross the street or run away. They're afraid. It is the mirror image of a stereotype that is based on the worst of what we see constantly and overreported on the news. That's all we see of those communities. That's all we see of police is when they do something wrong or when something goes wrong or becomes some sort of grim tally of shootings and murders and not what good goes on there or what good is being done by people who live there because that doesn't represent the majority or even there's no balance, right? So I connect people in a personal way. So we may have a peace circle with young people and police officers. We may have a dinner, we call it on the table, like the community trust does, where you sit together as human beings and talk about your truth because everybody sees it from their perspective. So what I find is that you find what you have in common. We are not just a cop or a disenfranchised young black youth from Inglewood. You are human beings at your core who want the exact same thing and just need to be connected to the way that you can work together to get to that thing, which is contentment. We all want a quality of life. We all want to live in a neighborhood that looks like right outside these studios, right, where people are walking around, they're happy, they're safe, they're shopping, they had a nice dinner. That's what everybody wants, and that's not what everybody has in Chicago. And when you have such disparity, you are going to end up with places where you almost have to be over-policed if you're under-resourced. And if you're over-policed, you're badly policed. But there are some great people in the police department, just like I've always known. There are great people in our communities, communities that most people, maybe you wouldn't even go out of your way to drive around, right? But I've always been in them, as you have, Walter, because as reporters, we kind of felt like we have this kind of immunity and found the exact same people, whether I'm on the Gold Coast, or in Roseland. They are the people want the same things, and they don't have them.
One of my battles with the media has been the way the television stations really create these images of African Americans in a negative sense, profile them. You cannot turn on a television news station without seeing a crime story that leads the news two or three stories deep every night, night after night. Not big stories, just another drive. Should be a big story,
but it's not
another driveway by shooting it. And all you see on the screen is a picture of a young African American, as you say, in dreadlocks. And then you see a body being carried out, and then another picture.
But it's not just about overreporting by news. Think about all media and where we are absent. I've become kind of obsessed with our absence. In things showing great times and wealth and prosperity, you can have an entire crowd scene of people and there'd not be a single African American in that. So, continuously, day after day, year after year, decade after decade, you get this image in your head of what that represents. What does it mean when you think of, the black community or of black people? What does it mean, that you're not thinking, great, wealthy, educated, powerful. We are absent from those media images just as we are overly present in a negative way in news images.
That you've stepped away from being an anchor and being, is that sort of perspective, is that
That was always my perspective.
But now you see, when you see media, when you see even the 9 o'clock news at Fox Chicago, do you feel that?
I felt it then. I spent 20 years fighting in editorial meetings, you know, saying, okay, you want to do that story. Is there another story? Can we get some balance here? Can we be intentional about it? And Walter was always fighting the fight. You know, we cannot just continue to report crime just as crime. You know, if you can get some meaning behind it, great, but you're just painting these communities as places where bad stuff happens. He really didn't like
it. So then the question becomes, why do we keep doing it?
Because, and my argument was, people have to live in places where these things happen, the very least we can do is be aware of it. Because if we don't know, we won't do anything about it. And my latest thing that I really have grabbed onto at a conference this week, where we had Dr. Joy DeGruy, who wrote Post-Traumatic Slave Syndrome, and actually talks about how we got where we are, how we can leave from it. Everybody has trauma from the history of this country, not just black people. Everybody has trauma from it, and it's untreated. But Pastor Chris Harris said, you can't talk about violence if you're not doing something about violence. So we all talk about it constantly, but what are you actually doing?
And
I'm not asking you to go out there and, you know, change the world. Just do one thing, okay? Go someplace where you haven't been. You know, talk to someone you haven't talked to. Start having a conversation about disparity and race and inequity and unearned privilege. That is a hard conversation.
I have to say, I mean, this is probably the most enlightened, overreported, underreported segment.
I'm sorry.
But you're right. I mean, in this discussion, in this segment, you know, we say, what's the most overreported? What's the most underreported? And in this conversation we're having, we're hitting both sides. The idea that overreported crime, underreported is
progress,
just progress and things that are happening that just the news has no interest in.
I still have not got an answer from you or anybody else. I think I do have an answer myself of why the media does what we're saying it does not for the welfare of the community, but for the detriment of the community.
Well, you know
those
the
stories, bad stories about crime in the inner city are what create a national, and more specifically in a town like this, a local division between black and white that's not going to be healed by having your community meetings. It's got
to
be
human being to human being. Well, I also think you have to.
That would be good, but it's somewhat idealistic. What I would like to do, first of all, is put some restraints on the people who make the decisions in the newsrooms as to what kinds of stories to cover.
Well, good luck with that First Amendment fight.
The African American involvement in cultural and business activities that you speak of, that you say, and I agree, the media doesn't cover enough. The only time the media seems to be covering something that happens to be either black or white is when there is a crime involved and it's black, and when there's a big meeting
or a crime involved and or something bad involved and there's police involved, right? So we're creating.
Right.
But what I'm saying is no one's going to put restraints on how people making decisions about what to cover. But what is changing it is that we don't depend on those outlets for our news anymore, right? So the whole. This is the world is your studio, all right? And you can open your phone, maybe not you, Walter, and be Facebook Live in a heartbeat. And people can seek out the news that they want, and you can really empower new voices. And they are these young people that are starting to be so activists. They don't watch the news; they have their own news streams,
course,
all right?
Right?
And they, you know, and it's that has a negative aspect too.
Well,
much of the violence is being. How can I put it? Not perpetrated, but there's a social media component to it.
Yeah.
You know, you shot our guy. We're coming over to shoot your guy.
Show, yeah. It's immediate.
But everybody wants to be a celebrity, and they're creating a celebrity culture within, you know, a dysfunctional and deadly, but what's available to them industry. All right. So
Walter Jacobson, Robin Robinson.
We'll keep arguing
in
after
studio.
We go
now, let's take a quick break so we stay on time here. And this is great. That was our overreported, underreported. Mine was Kardashian Robin. So
oh, yeah.
I feel like
which was overreported for you. Okay,
I said overreported.
We're sorry.
My
point being, I do nothing Kardashian.
This is so much better than mine.
We could tie that to the police stuff too. Why don't you say that?
We could do that. But we'll take a break instead. Robin Robinson, Walter Jacobson, reloading this week's news here on the Download 720 WGN. Stay with us. Right, it's 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Walter Jacobson, Robin Robinson in studio tonight. We're reloading the week that was. We're doing the big stories, the winners, the losers, the overreported, the underreported. Which story took you down the rabbit hole tonight and which story will be remembered 50, 100, 500 years from tonight?
Mm.
Let's stay on underreported. Today, my underreported is a story. It was a huge story with the Chicago Police. Great to have you. It's great timing to have you here.
We didn't plan this. That's true.
But the move to change to a use of force to change the way we see use of force in the police department, to really change the policy and to get public input. This is something that would have been big news in Chicago if it wasn't for the Cubs, the Hurricane, and Donald Trump.
And Donald Trump. You know, but the good thing about it is it's not today the story's not here and done. There was a time we would have said, this is the new order, this is our new use of force policy. Great, go, and you know, let's go with it. But instead, what you have now is 45 days for the public as well as police personnel, because of, let's remember they are members of the public, to comment, to suggest, to say, well, we think maybe you could tweak it here, or how about that? Because to think that all the wisdom lies within, you know, the Chicago Police Department leadership cannot be right.
And this is what a lot of community activists and others have talked about, this idea of transparency and public input and saying
co-creating like things. Yeah. You know, people have to let you know how they want peace to be kept in their communities. I mean, it's really people buy into and own things that they have helped create. And I can tell you that we're very sincere. The superintendent is very sincere about the fact that this is a proposed order. It is a draft order, and it's out there online.
Is essentially the concept to change the old sort of use of force, which was
it places sanctity of human life as the very top. The very top value. But it also, there are a couple of other major changes it proposes, like highlighting the fact, which has been true but kind of not maybe always been considered the most important part, that one officer should intervene if they see another officer who has, you know, you become emotionally involved, I'm sure. I don't know. Please let's be straight on this. I am not one of the brave people that puts my life on the line as a law enforcement person, right? So I can't get in their head, but it's got to be the most difficult thing in the world to be making these split second life and death decisions under a lot of scrutiny and with a lot of responsibility, right? But it says, you know, if you see a fellow officer who has gotten emotional, they're escalating when they should be de-escalating, you intervene. Not necessarily you report them and make sure they get fired, but you intervene right then, not report it later. You say, hold up, Joe, Gene, whoever it is, whoever your partner is, whoever's there, they could be of the same rank. So you're not technically their boss, but you are to intervene. And so that's one of the proposals.
We've seen a lot with the police department this week. We saw the new agency created by Rahm Emanuel on Wednesday.
Well, it's not an agency quite yet.
But the idea that it was voted in from council. Also, we saw today Superintendent Eddie Johnson, the story that went national about an officer who didn't want to use deadly force, didn't want to shoot somebody and was hurt by it, and she said this is through the superintendent, but the superintendent saying that, hey, you know what, she feared that there would be backlash and she would be her family would be in danger, and she chose not to use
force. That he'd have to explain. But just because those are two of the things that she considered, which I can't even imagine in that moment of having someone, the person actually turned out to be probably in a drug state of
PCP in the system, right?
Had her hair wrapped around his wrist and was banging her head on the ground, had punched her. Her partner was tasing him. But to be having those considerations along with, can I end this without loss of life? So it's not that those are the only things. She wasn't just thinking
We're talking about how it was underreported. Mm-hmm. And the reason it's underreported is because it is a very sensitive, hugely touchy subject. That being, what about the police officers who are afraid to take the steps they need to take to get some peace and stop the violence, because they are going to wind up on the front pages of all the newspapers and on television? Because there is no question that woman, 43-year-old police officer, 17 years on the force, whose head was being bashed on the cement and is in the hospital right now, she should have shot that guy.
You can't ever say someone.
Yes,
it worked out.
Our problem,
but
Robin.
Look how it's worked out. They're both alive, Walter. That's not a better outcome. How can you possibly say that someone should be shot ended up being? There are people who say that people who, you know, blew things up and killed 100 people should have been shot too, but they managed to be taken into custody alive. I think that for you to say after the fact, that's crazy. How could you say such a thing, that someone should be dead?
I didn't say, well.
Yeah, yes, you did. Take it back quick while you have a chance.
What we're afraid to do, and because of politics, what we have caused the police to do is become crouch inside. They're afraid to act because they know the consequences of acting. And she said that, too. And
she, well, you know, but that's not the only reason that she didn't shoot him, I'm sure. I can't get inside her head. But I do think that, we do need to value the service that police officers provide, and that just as they have been stereotyped by the actions of the worst, right, and other groups of people are experiencing the same thing, that we have to find a way to give them the ability to do what they, most of them, the vast majority, signed up to do, which is to really help people. But they have to also have clear direction. So one of the things that the superintendent said about the, you know, reissuing and kind of and rewriting, really, and it's really a model that doesn't compare to anything in the country, rewriting the use of force order, yeah, is that it codifies. It says, you know, really spells things out. And the rank and file officers will not be, this order will not be adopted until they've been trained on it. But it's not like someone gives you a piece of paper and says, okay, now this is what you're going to do.
But what Walter's talking about is not going to go away. And you're seeing John Cass wrote a big article about it in the Tribune today. I mean, the concept of this Ferguson effect, where police officers are afraid to act because they're afraid they're going to get, in the newspapers and they're going to have problems with their family. That's something that I think as a society we're going to have to address at some point. I mean, even the mayor has gone out and kind of talked about the concept of, I guess it's the concept of the blue flu, kind of, where the morale is so low that we're seeing, you know, possibly spikes in crime because police officers don't want to get involved.
Well, just as you don't hear the whole story of how people operate and are, you don't hear the whole story of how people feel about police officers, right? Most of us have somebody in our family that's a police officer, so right, we know on some level that they're human beings. The question for people becomes, why can't you make sure that those of you who you know are not acting with integrity like you are, why can't you make sure that they're not there? Right. There's going to be no perfection. But when I hear things like the Ferguson effect, I want to know, well, are we going to talk about the Ferguson effect of what brought that community to the point of desperation to begin with? We're going to talk about the Roseland effect, the Englewood effect, the Woodlawn effect.
Why people come out to protest in such large numbers when there is a police shooting. And you see this a lot, and a lot of people maybe actually for police or whatever, or Blue Lives Matters kind of say, you know, that person wasn't the greatest person in the world. You don't know all the facts, blah, blah. But it's the idea that around the country, communities will go out and protest for someone they didn't know from Baton Rouge or from Minnesota. It says something very, very
deeper than
what's happening. Robin Robinson, Walter Jacobson in studio the week that was. All right, we come back. We'll do Rabbit Hole and what story will be remembered. We're going to get an update from Rob Martier as well on the Cubs game. Stay with us. Welcome back to 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. It's a download. Walter Jacobson, Robin Robinson. It's great. Long form reloading this week's news. Great to see you guys.
It's his way of saying we talk a lot.
No, absolutely not. This is the conversation we all want to have with you guys. Like, obviously, you know, did the news for so long at Fox Chicago, but the concept of having a conversation about the news that you cover and what's happening around us, especially this week, is great. Yeah, we were just having the conversation about the police officer, just this Ferguson effect, the concept of this woman who was on the force for 17 years who did not use deadly force.
Mm-hmm. When she could have. And Walter and I argue, we've had many debates over this of whether she should have. And even our boss says, she says she knew she should have, but she didn't. And so I think if she had, no one, you know, obviously all these things could have been investigated, but no one could have blamed her. Right. But I think it's heroic that everybody got to live, that all human life was preserved.
But I also wanted to raise the question of the opportunity that I think the superintendent, Eddie Johnson, lost, and that was to develop some kind of position that will give the police force the confidence to do the work it has to be done. I don't want to get on the racial side of this one or the other, and I know we could, you've kind of pinpointed me or locked me into a box where if I say the police should be more comfortable doing what needs to be done to bring some peace, that sounds like I want to say it's okay for police to go around shooting people. And you know I don't believe that. I'm on the other side of that issue. But I think the question is so wrought with politics.
The police should certainly know.
the superintendent has to take a position if there's any chance of keeping that number down of homicides, the homicide number. 5,000 people have been shot in Chicago this year.
Not 5,000.
500 people have been shot.
No, 500 and something. Almost 600 have been killed. About 3,000 or more have been shot.
Right.
Okay. But peacekeeping is certainly something that has to go way beyond the police department. And I think when you say the superintendent needs to, he can't make sure that you revere police officers. And I think they should be. I hate to say, I mean, let's face it. Could you do that? Could you make those kind of split second decisions? I mean, these are people who you know, they got into this work to help people,
right.
And yet, you know, we've been doing policing kind of the same way for many, many years, and we're not any safer, and there's no less violence. So obviously,
and we've seen I guess the right word for it, but a disintegration of the relationship between communities in some parts of Chicago and the police.
Yeah, because we've given them almost an impossible task. You know, we've said, you know, we're going to pull everything out of this community, leave them just bare bones.
Right.
Now go in there, take care of that, do it nicely. I think that you have to start looking at the broader issues because all of the social ills and failures fall at the doorstep of police and
okay, Rob, but that is said over and over.
Well, when are you going to do something
about it? Let me just finish my sentence.
No,
that's been said over and over again 100 times already from everybody, from the president to the mayor to the policeman on the beat. Mm-hmm. Let's do something about strengthening these communities. Let's spend our money not on building a basketball court for DePaul, not on building beautiful fences along the outer drive, but put the money in the neighborhoods that need the help to create jobs. That's been said. We've said that. What are you going to do to stop the violence tomorrow? What do you think can be done?
What are you willing to accept? If it stopped it tomorrow, if they locked everybody up, would you accept that?
No. Don't stretch my argument. That's unfair.
I'm just saying, you know, it's what would you be willing to have in your neighborhood if there were violence?
If I were Eddie Johnson and Rahm Emanuel, I would say that we must stop this immediately. We've tried everything. We've gone to the legislature. We can't get kind of the legislation to put more control on weapons and gun licenses.
So what would stop it immediately?
The police force to do its job and make people feel okay about it.
Okay,
and
so
I
would interject only in the sense that I think what I hear Robin saying, which is something that you know I don't hear all the time, is the fact that you pull all these resources out of a community and then you ask the police department unfairly to be not only the police but to be the social service agency, to be the community directors and everything. And it's just too much on the police, and it's not fair to them, and it's not also what they were trying to do.
I agree with that.
So the question really might be at a different level, if it's the mayor or the Cook County president or somewhere else, to say we need to maybe bring mental health clinics back, or maybe we need to bring other services back to help the police be able to do their job.
To build the capacity of communities to resolve their own problems in partnership with police.
And what I hear you saying is, what are you going to do tomorrow?
You've got to create jobs. Because 500 people have been shot this year so far. And 500 shot, right?
500 killed.
And 2,000 shot.
3,000 shot.
Well, you know what? The numbers almost get to be dehumanizing. they all belong to someone.
All right, let's take a quick break. We'll do our last break before we wrap up tonight. I want to talk about the teacher strike, which is a big story, and I think that's one we'll talk about, and also what stories will be remembered coming up here 50, 100, 500 years from now. Walter Jacobson, Robin Robinson in studio with me tonight on a download. So happy 720 WGN. Stay with us. It's 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. It's a download. Walter Jacobson, Robin Robinson in studio with me tonight. We're reloading the week that was in news, and we pretty much covered all the big stories. The one that we haven't talked about, and it's really my rabbit hole story, yours was obviously was about the campaign, and we talked about the campaign a little bit with Trump and Clinton and police. We talked about police, and we continue to talk about that. Teacher strike. You know, I just was thinking about this today. Columbus Day is a day off for CPS, and that means that the teacher strike is set for October 11th. We could be in a situation where we will not see a classroom for parents of CPS, you know, for the foreseeable future. We are seeing this story ratchet up, both sides, CPS, CTU, saying that they're going to hunker down. CTU has gone to the airwaves. I think they're playing commercials here on WGN to essentially make their case, because I would make the argument, I don't know how close you're paying attention to this, Walter, but I'd make the argument that this time around, it's a little bit more nebulous. It's a little bit more gray and vague about what they're actually fighting about.
Well, some of the numbers, however, are very clear. And the number that argues best for the teacher's position is that the city wants to take, the Board of Education wants to take away 7% of its salary by stopping its contributions to the pension program. And that's something that's easy to understand. And that's something that will get enough support from the citizenry to give the teachers the strength to walk out. I wouldn't be surprised if they do.
And I also say, I mean, this is a town that gets behind its teachers. It always has. But Rahm Emanuel, Mayor Emanuel, has said, and Forrest Claypool as well, that this would be a choice
right
by the teachers, not a necessity. This would be a choice they would be making to harm the kids here in Chicago.
Yeah. Kind of a silly argument for the mayor to say it's a choice, not a necessity.
Well,
it's a necessity to them. It's a choice to him. I mean, that's just rhetoric, right?
Well, I mean, say it's a choice. I'm sure that the teachers would argue it was a choice over the years for you to underfund the pension so that you're now in a financial crisis. The pension crisis certainly goes beyond teachers. I mean, the whole state is in a pension crisis. And I think as people approach retirement age and young people are looking ahead to, will I ever be able to retire, that this whole, you know, we all know we're all looking at the idea of pension and pensioners a little bit differently. But, you know, this is, you know, it's like something was agreed to, and now we spent that money on something else, kind of a thing, and it just doesn't seem quite fair, but people, you can only pay what you can pay,
and fair is a big, I guess, component of this. Is you'll hear the city say, listen, we're all trying to give up our fair share. The city will say, you've seen all the pain we've just had to go through with taxes and homeowners and everything we need to do to make sure we're covering it, whether it be in the municipality or the police fund, pension, teachers, we need you as well to step up. Do you think at this time around, because we just went through this, 3 years ago or whatever, do you think this time around, because it's been so public, the fact that we are out of money in the city of Chicago, that there possibly may be less support for teachers to take this stand?
I don't know. This has also been very public of some of the reasons that we're out of money. And I think that, if people have more, whether or not we've intended to be more transparent, as everyone says we are, I think we have been by just technology has made things more transparent. And I think that that there are people who say, you had money for this, money for that. But by the same token, people want a better result from education. But you also have, at the same time, for the first time ever, a charter school threatening to strike.
It's
a charter
crazy
school network is threatening to strike as well. So I think that the idea that there seems to be some, if not unwillingness, but not prioritizing a valuing of education.
How do you,
even though we say that's at the base of everything?
And how do you see it playing out? We have seen our last school bell, in the sense that the Columbus Day the kids will be out, and Tuesday morning we will know if there is a strike or not.
Right.
Walter, how do you see it playing out?
Well, I think you can never doubt that Rahm Emanuel will somehow come up with what he needs to pull. Speaking of rabbit holes, pull a rabbit out of the hole in his hat. Somehow
I hope so.
He will do that. I wouldn't be surprised, as I said a few minutes ago, if the teachers actually walk out. But we've got 2 days at least to do something about it, and Rahm Emanuel will find a way. Emanuel, like all mayors before him, has all kinds of money that he could reach into in different ways if he really felt he has to.
I don't know if that's true. Oh, people always say that.
All he's got to do is open his Rolodex and call some of these big corporate CEOs who have been in his pocket for so long, and he wants to help. Wants to continue to help them to every extent he can, because that's good for the city as well. Watch him find a way to get out.
Well, they've been talking about raiding the TIF fund. This is the first time the TIFs, of course.
They did say they're going to use some of the TIF fund for some of this. I think, you talk about the Rolodex and private investment, because frankly, without an educated citizenry, we don't become such a good investment as a city. If we can't, because that, you're talking about fix things, immediately. We've got to. It took a long time to get here, and it'll take a long time, to get out of the current really tragic situation of the kind of two Chicagos. But one of the things I think most people agree upon is that a quality, excellent education is one of the things that we have to have. It is a little scary right now, though. I mean, the teachers are being told by their union, unless you hear otherwise, report to your school Tuesday morning at 6 a.m. with picket signs. And so we've got to be hoping that they are talking, you know, right now. Right. I hope they're not watching the Cubs game. Speaking of which, what did you think? I know this is another subject, part of a different rabbit hole, but, you know, that's what happens. What did you think about the fact that any elected official who got free games, free tickets to the Cubs game, have to be announced at the game? Did we miss that, too, on tonight's broadcast?
I think the best one didn't show that part.
70% of the aldermen have already accepted the ticket deal from the Cubs. 80% of the members of the Illinois General Assembly. Well,
what about members of the media? You know, we used to get some free tickets.
Yeah.
Come on, let's admit it.
Those days are long over.
Well, that's because we're not big anymore.
And these tickets are not free. And
no, they're face value.
Well, ours weren't
face
free value, either, to be honest. And, you know, but they were priceless because you can't get a ticket at face value.
And I think it's interesting that it was a fine print saying you will be announced, you will publicly announce, right, which is kind of like...
They march across the field, have them sing the national anthem, do something, right?
That's in the ethics code.
It is, yeah.
And also that the aldermen have to use the tickets that they buy for themselves, or at least they have
they
to be one
to, like,
of the two they get.
Lobbies and
stuff. And they will announce it. Yeah, I'll bet they do announce it over the PA system.
Like Connie's Pizza with Alderman James Gappelman.
Yeah, right. Well, are you sure that he took the tickets? Because before you start naming names and things.
No, I just use them as
And what, if we, can we, should we not end on, if,
yeah, right,
we,
let's
on
do,
a happy note?
Okay, the last one is, which story from this week will be remembered in 5 years, 10 years, 50 years, 500 years? What's the story that people will remember from this week?
Whatever the Cubs, in here or nationwide or whatever.
In general, aliens pull out the capsule in
general,
500 years from now.
Yeah, in general, it will be the campaign. Trump versus Clinton.
I
think it's possible that Clinton will win it because Trump may bomb out.
Because of this one thing.
However, you know, if the Republicans have a chance to pick a new candidate, any one of those candidates who have been high in the polls up until the conventions might be Hillary. They'd have to reconvene the convention.
Oh, Lord.
Or
news people would love this.
Way too close.
Look at the Tribune was so they couldn't endorse Trump.
They wouldn't endorse Clinton.
They went to the Libertarian.
Well,
the
Republican National Committee on its own, with 180 some members, could choose someone. They've got all the problems of getting on the ballot, and all the deadlines aren't.
Well, as much
they're
as I think
stuck with the horse that they came with at this point, Robin. What do you have for the
I think
story?
That will only be the one that's remembered 100 years from now if Trump wins.
If the Cubs win the World Series, that'll be news on.
Yeah, well, that's not
now.
This week,
So I think though that because the Cubs, are looking so good that this will be part of the historic.
This time will be remembered.
Yeah, it'll be. I mean, how long have we been talking about? It's like next year's finally here.
I think they'll remember this week. Two things I'll say before we wrap up. One, I wonder if this is the story, the Trump and the tape from Access Hollywood from 2005 being degrading to women and talking off on microphone. Is Mitt Romney's 47% comment is this the one that now he can't recover and we're going to see him actually peter out. But I want to say that the one that we will remember the story will be backup Chicago Bears quarterback Brian Hoyer.
Oh, okay.
Because Brian Hoyer is going to win this week. Mm. He's going to continue a winning streak with this team. They're going to become the Cardiac Kids. The Bears will win the Super Bowl this year. And Brian Hoyer will all remember this week as the week that he started it all.
Okay. What happens to your guy Cutler?
Cutler who? Right?
Is there enough ventilation in the studio?
Brian Hoyer's valet. All right.
Robin Robinson, Walter Jacobson, it was a pleasure to have you together again in the studio here at WGN. I can't thank you enough for coming in and talking about the weekend news. It was a real pleasure. It was it was great for Chicago and Chicagoans to hear your voices.
Our pleasure to be here. I'm sure I speak for Robin when I say that.
He's been trying to speak for me for 20 years.
Yes.
Yours is the only download that I feel technologically capable of completing. So thank you very much, Justin, for having me.